Introducing Edublogging. My name is Glenn Grew, and I'm going to be talking about Edublogging as an introduction. The first step is talking about the overview of the presentation, and so I'll be talking about a number of different blogging platforms, blogging perspectives and settings, talking about blogging as a process of mentoring between learner and the mentor. Talking about the contrast between cohort blogging, seminar blogging, autonomous blogging, and then reviewing some of the blogging paradigms, implications, and then just talking further on blogging in general. In one of the slides I've got here, it talks about blogging within Desire to Learn, and it has a very specific way of blogging within this particular type of platform. And it does have some of the elements of a blog, and it does deal with some of the tags, and it does have some opportunity to network. But for the most part, from what I've seen within Desire to Learn, in this particular context, it's very, it's not used very often. And so when we talk about blogging, and people refer to blogging within an LMS, a learning management system. They refer to Moodle or to Desire to Learn or some other learning management system, and they think that's what blogging is, and it isn't. There are a number of other contexts in which you can blog. The other one is within a Ning network, and the example I use was the BC Literacy Forum. And again, it does have some functionality. I can weave some of my links into there and do some things with it. But for the most part, blogs are very underutilized in even Ning networks of this kind. So, you know, you have very low utilization rates within LMSs and Ning networks, professional networks in general. So it really, you're not sure exactly what a blog is by looking at those things. The other thing is, within a practice network such as the AU Landing, the usefulness of a blog is more amply demonstrated. It does have tags. It does have a tag cloud to some extent. It does attempt to use some RSS feeds, and for the most part, you can choose the range of options for access. I mean, you can make them private or public as you wish. There are some issues when it comes to inserting resources to it and embedding it, but again, this is more of a design issue than a blogging issue. And so when I talk about blogging within a practice network, I think it's rather different than from within an LMS. So in my particular case, I've used blogs from the context of, you know, not just blog posts, but talking about how to upload the files, how to add messages, how to integrate it into the overall landing educational social software. So the use of widgets, the use of pages, bookmarks, even polls and photo albums, uploading photos, facilitating a group of learners, in this case the academic blogging circle, making use of wire posts. There are a number of different features embedded within the landing that blogging supports. So when I talk about blogging, I'm talking about all of those other tools that can be used alongside it, not just the glorified guestbook. The other side of it is Edublogging for Literacy is an example of an Edublogs type of blog, and this is a more of a community literacy blog, and it's built on WordPress. And it has a wider range of options and features, both a front-end and a back-end administrative page. And from here, I have a series of links that I can manipulate and use. I have a tag cloud. I have a number of boxes that I can add things to through widgets and plugins. So my themes can be modified. I can add pages. I can add tweets. I can go back and forth and change it and edit. I can add tags and so on. There's a number of different things I can do within a WordPress blog that I can't do in any other. So I've mentioned the dashboard. The dashboard is quite a bit more elaborate, allowing me to post, to manage my media, manage my links, pages, comments, manage the plugins, widgets, appearances, and then a number of other options available for managing the posts and so on. So the administrative backend through the use of the dashboard is essential for really getting a feel for what blogging is. Now, from the perspective of blogging, we need to recognize that learners are going to be different. And so when they are even getting into these different tools and they talk about blogs, they also have to take inventory of what type of blogger they are. Are they more what I call the private blogger, a person who's kind of reluctant to reveal their personal information to a cohort? I would prefer just to do their own thing privately without really having to share their ideas with others. They have legitimate reasons in many cases. Then there's the autonomous blogger who just goes ahead and does what they want, and they don't worry too much about the issue of privacy. I mean, they don't post things that are absolutely private, but at the same time they're not concerned too much about their reluctance to post stuff that, you know, their drafts and ideas, and they see it as an opportunity for them to learn from others, and by modeling it, they learn from themselves as well. When I talk about the anonymous blogger as a perspective, I'm talking about the profiles. These learners are not really interested in blogging with other people from the perspective of, you know, let's see who this person is. I'd rather just, in this particular case, the anonymous blogger is more interested in talking about the ideas, exploring ideas and expressing ideas and sharing experiences without other people really worrying about who that person is. There's a certain safety in anonymity, and rather than having everyone disclose everything and have everyone know who you are, there's a certain allure to anonymity and the use of avatars in educational blogging. Again, has it been demonstrated? Not really, and this is where I think anonymous blogging will not really take off for several years as a genre in itself. It's most commonly used in confessional blogging and therapeutic blogging and group blogging, where people are not necessarily interested in finding out who the other person is for networking, but more for sharing experience. Embedded blogging are those socials, those individuals who are really socially interested in engaging others, and they're motivated by this engagement. On the other hand, they're disengaged and demotivated by a absence of interaction with others. So it's interesting to see the differences between private and embedded. The networked blogger is the kind of person that's doing it for utilitarian, pragmatic purposes. They're there to get the stuff they need. They get in, they get out. They're very functional, very structured, very sequential, very efficient. And so they're using the skills in an entirely different way than, say, the autonomous blogger. The personal blogger is a person who can smoothly, comfortably move between these different perspectives and often have more than one blog in different contexts. You have the edublog, you have the professional blog for work, you have the community blog of some kind, you have a personal blog, a creative blog that you participate in, and you participate in a number of online learning environments. So your blogging embodies a number of different perspectives. Then we have the blogging settings. Within edublogging itself, the academic blogging settings are dealing with the cohort, the class blogging, group blogging, the seminar, in which people are cooperating with each other, but they're working on their own independent projects. The blogging circle is a bit different. The blogging circle is assuming that the individual instructor is mentoring independent studies with individual learners. So unlike the seminar, the ties between the learners are much looser, much weaker. And yet what ties them together is the instructor. And the mentor instructor plays a vital role in tying them all together. And this is an interesting element of, you know, the implications for blogging really, really come to the fore with the blogging circle and the practice network, which is less formal. There's a number of different models that go on within a practice network. What I mean is, within the practice network, you have cohorts, seminars, blocking circles, and a number of informal courses running at the same time. So you have both formal and informal courses, you have seminars, you have independent studies, you have people doing their autonomous learning, you have alumni, you have administrators, faculty, working indirectly, informally with one another. This is the practice network. So when I talk about blogging as mentoring, then it really does come down to the interaction between the instructor and the individual learners. As much as I'd like to say that blogging is about the individual, it's also about how the individual is provided the scaffolding and support in order to grow and develop. So blogging as mentoring is critical. And they do this primarily through the mentor. The mentor has a number of resources available that they draw upon, RSS feeds that they draw upon, their own blogs, posts and comments from others, links from online journal articles, for example, other blog archives, blog roles, tag clouds that they draw upon, blog search tools, annotated bookmark collections, restricted professional journals, and online communities. They then filter this, funnel this, and pass it on to the student through model posts and archives, a blog role of their own, embedded links, suggestions and resources, bookmarks, and comments from others on the mentor's blog. So this is interesting to point out that, in fact, the mentor is acting as a filter, and a selective filter, providing the modeling and exemplars. We have an important role when it comes to cohort blogging, and in the case of cohort blogging, students who are blogging review content specific to the course. The group blog becomes the central focus. There's limited interaction between the learners at the beginning, because as peers, they're mainly focused on getting the stuff done and getting the grades. Peer interaction is nice to have, but not necessary to get the course done. Their interactions are mainly with the instructor, and this is a loose interpretation with cohort blogging. Commenting seems to be the main form of interaction between the instructor and learners, between themselves. Tags are sometimes used to categorize their posts, but more often than not, they're random and they're disorganized. There seems to be a lot of uncertainty and ambivalence, and this is a common attitude amongst learners within the cohort blogging. At least at the very beginning. And I just want to mention that within one's own blog, it's maybe a few posts. Most of the activities go on within the group blog. It's hard to get a feel for what else is going on within the cohort and keep track of all the other blogging going on. So this is one of the main objections or main issues with cohort blogging for newcomers to blogging tools. In effect, within cohort blogging, there's peer interaction, there's article critiques, there's reflective posts, there's literature reviews, there's weaving of ideas, sharing of resources to some extent, if modeled, there's summary reflective posts, and there's some initial connections made with some peers, but for the most part, this is rudimentary. This is very, very superficial, for the most part. Not always, though. On the other hand, with seminar blogging, you have maybe six or seven people independently working on their projects, centralized through a group blog. They work on their own blogs, they develop their own ideas, they interact with others, only insofar as they cooperate with others to get the job done. They help each other indirectly. So there seems to be more reciprocity, more altruistic helping with each other. And as an individual learner, you learn how to go about posting, linking, commenting, and tagging, adding links, bookmarks, etc. And you do that by watching what the instructor does and watching what your peers do and patterning your own behavior based on what you see around you. The group blog is sort of a showcase of ideas. So the group blog becomes a decentralized, it becomes lesser in importance than your own blog, and as far as using the resources available to you, you use peers as well as your instructor. So that's the seminar blogging. So in effect, within seminar blogging, certain activities occur. There's a creation of annotated bookmarks, organizing of posts for easier retrieval and reuse, such as in the use of piling of tags. There's pause points, which involve self-monitoring of progress made. There's weaving ideas from articles, websites, and blog posts. The feedback that's received is mainly from the instructor as well as from peers. Sometimes there's a bit of both. Critical discussion is created, and there's more extended conversation. First is comments, and then what often happens is that individuals then move off the comment thread onto their own individual blog posts to weave peers' posts and instructors' posts or external blog posts into their own. And that's where things shift from the cohort to seminar. In effect, there's a lot more sharing of resources and experiences, and there's accumulated knowledge based on summary individual presentations. So, as I say, it's more of a cooperative environment. Then I get into the blogging circles. And as I say, the mentor is the instructor. They are the center of the activity because the instructor is, in fact, interacting with individual peers who are not tied to any particular courses with each other. They're not connected by cohort or by seminar. They're doing their own thing. They're all independent learners, but the instructor is working with them. And again, there's a lot looser ties with each other as peers, but it's nice to know. It's nice to know you have other peers working alongside you. So this is more of a cooperative model. And a blogging circle then is so that, you know, I have my own blog. I'm looking at RSS readers, tag clouds, comments, and I'm looking at others, you know, alongside doing the same thing and drawing from them best practices and promising practices. So I see, for example, somebody has something on a blog roll, or they have additional stuff going on in their tag cloud, or they have some commenting going on, or they have a Flickr feed, or they have tweets, for example, or they have a number of other things going on that you don't use, say, delicious bookmarks. Whatever it might be, you then tap into that, learn from that, and then model it, use it in your own work. So you apply what you learn from others and from your instructor to build your knowledge network. And that's a less formal process. So this is within the blogging circle. There's retagging of posts. There's revisiting and revising of earlier posts. There's a lot more extensive weaving of ideas from one's own posts into subsequent posts. So serializing, I call that. There's more texturing, there's more weaving of comments, articles, websites, and others, blogs, posts into your own. The feedback that's received is mainly from the instructor, but also from peers, although that's not obligatory. It's reciprocal, it's altruistic, but these types of interactions are not part of any cohort or course. They do it because they want to. They do it because they're intrigued by the activity going on around them. So there's a lot more engagement in self-talk and idea capture in these blog posts, and the blog posts actually become more proactive, more engaged, with more purposeful posting, so that they're basing it more on a looking back, looking forward approach. Then we have autonomous blogging. And in the case of autonomous blogging, there's a lot more extensive stuff going on. There's a lot more extensive RSS reader feeds, aggregation. There's use of email alerts. There's use of maybe Posterous, page flakes, Twitter, commenting, use of a very extensive annotated set of bookmarks, a tag cloud, categories, tags, blog roles, links, a number of other opportunities for building your ideas and connecting them to other resources. And I'll just give another couple of examples. MP3s in terms of a podcast feed, and also the use of, what was it? The use of screen jelly, the use of page flakes. These are just some other examples. There are many. SlideShare, etc. LinkedIn is also used. So, again, as you look around you and you look around at the peers at this level, you look at what's going on with other peers and what they're doing, other instructors and what they're doing, other people within the larger community, and you start learning from them. And so the instructor, in effect, moves off from being the sole or the primary resource to being one of many. So within autonomous blogging, within a practice network, there is more extensive retagging, revisiting, and revising. The blogger in this case participates as a guest and observer with other groups of students in addition to completing their own coursework. In effect, they're intrigued with others, they engage others, not because they're part of a course, but because they want to. They engage in resource sharing as well as path sharing with groups of people on, you know, different courses and different programs. They continue to engage in self-talk and idea capture at a more elaborate level. They're primarily more self-regulated as learners. The instructor becomes more of an observer, guide, and again, mentor. And they draw sources from other blogging experts outside the institution, as well as the instructor and other people within the practice network. So an autonomous blogger extends their network further and further out beyond the practice network. What are the implications for this? Well, blogging needs to be introduced to new student bloggers within a supportive context. Newcomers need to be provided with aid and resources by more experienced peers and facilitators. This idea of a cohort blogging environment in which everybody is pretty much newcomers is not the most ideal kind of environment, and what is probably needed are more guests and more experts and more experienced observers that will guide them, not just a bunch of beginners who really can't really draw experiences from each other as much as they'd like, but it's really hard for them to do that if they don't know where to go, what to model, etc. The other thing that's important as an implication is that collaboration with beginners should best be supported by a core group of experienced student facilitator bloggers willing to provide aid and support. So the support model in place right now is that you have a tutor and you have the instructor. There needs to be a different way of thinking about this to allow for more support. Finally, all learners and teachers should be more actively encouraged to practice their more sustained long-term blogging within all the different learning environments, the cohort, the seminar, the blogging circle, as well as within the practice network. So, the best way to learn how to blog is to blog. Thank you very much for listening, everyone.